From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. One person died in a fire at an outdoor camp in East Anchorage on Thursday morning. According to the Anchorage Fire Department, a passerby reported a fire in a wooded area of Bancroft Park at 7:20 a.m. Thursday. Anchorage police and firefighters arrived and found the fire, a victim, and one other person displaced by the fire. Crews got the fire under control within minutes. Anchorage Fire Department Assistant Chief Alex Boyd says the person who died was asleep when a small heat source inside the tent started the fire, which appears to have caused their death.
There's no indication it wasn't. However, the medical examiner's office will be the one that finally declares the cause of death.
The Anchorage Police Department is investigating the death. The victim's name won't be released until next of kin are notified. According to the fire department, a dozen people have now died in fires in Anchorage this year. Two others were also in outdoor encampments. In an interview at the end of July, Boyd said firefighters were responding to more frequently to fires affecting the city's unhoused community. Now, as winter begins, he says the department is hearing about fewer fires, but not necessarily because there are fewer.
Okay. So we aren't getting as many calls because I think they're just not being seen as frequently. Like this one was fairly well hidden off in the brush area and not visible from the road until it actually caught fire. That was a passerby called the fire again.
Boyd said the fire department and the Red Cross held fire safety education outreach events over the summer at denser homelessness sites and installed smoke detectors in campers, motorhomes, and regular cars people were using as shelters. As part of Native American Heritage Month, the American Bar Association recently asked a group of Native women to talk about how they became both lawyers and trailblazers. The panel included the U.S. Interior Secretary, Alaska's former Lieutenant Governor, Valerie Davidson, and other Native women who have made their mark in the legal world. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, there were some common threads in their discussion.
For Native American women in law, Secretary Deb Holland says there is a lot to celebrate, but also some heavy lifting to do.
We cannot honor these accomplishments in a vacuum.
Holland says it's good that there are more Native women in law, but this progress comes amid what she calls somber reminders, from the marginalization of Native Americans to the chronic neglect of missing, murdered, and Indigenous people.
The MMIP crisis will take the brilliance of legal minds like yours to overcome the jurisdictional challenges that make it difficult to address.
The women on the panel said a strong desire to serve their communities motivated them to go to law school, as well as encouragement from their elders, especially aunties and grandmas. Valerie Davidson, a Yupik from Southwest Alaska, began to take an interest in law when she worked as a legislative aide to put herself through college. It was then she realized that lobbyists armed with law degrees had the most success in changing government policy.
One of the things I did very intentionally was refuse every offer to become a prosecutor. And my response was really direct. No, thanks. You're doing a great job of putting our people in jail. You don't need our help to do that more effectively. You're doing just fine on your own.
Davidson, now president and CEO of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, says a law degree gave her a seat at the table as a decision maker, as well as the opportunity to be a game changer.
Not only being at the table, but designing a different table that is more inclusive is setting up an expectation of behavior and really upping everybody's game.
Stacy Leeds, a Native law and policy scholar, also weighed in. Leeds, who is a dean of law at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at the University of Arizona, says Native lawyers can serve as mentors to the Western legal system, which she says has a lot to learn from tribes and their values.
They seem to be spoken about as if their finest days were somewhere in the past. And that's the complete opposite. Most of our tribes right now are undergoing a pretty profound renaissance in language, in arts, in culture.
The panel also talked about the need to include tribes at state and federal levels of government. Valerie Davidson says when she was Alaska's health commissioner, it was sometimes as simple as picking up a pen.
Actually, a Sharpie would do. Add a comma and add the word tribes and tribal organizations. You will do more to advance our efforts than you would imagine.
The lawyers say they need to work harder to educate others about the benefits of tribal courts and tribal government. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Sitka's new Catholic priest has an unusual skill set. He's also the official exorcist for the Catholic Church in Alaska. KCAW's Meredith Reddick sat down with Father Joseph McGilloway, a former Benedictine monk who moved to Sitka in September to talk about his work in a ministry sensationalized by pop culture.
You've been the exorcist for the Catholic Church of Alaska for 4 years. How did you get into that? What motivated you to do this work?
Okay, so nothing. So what happened was we had the then Archbishop of Anchorage had brought a friend of his, a priest who's been an exorcist for almost 20 years, to talk to us. So then a few weeks later, I was trying to get the book, and the book was blocked. You could only buy it with a bishop's permission. So I asked the bishop, hey, would you give me a letter of permission, or could you order from me, and I'll pay for it or whatever? And he said, leave that until I see you. So a few weeks later, I met him at a mutual friend's house for dinner. As we were leaving the house, I said, oh, by the way, did you think about whether or not I could have that book? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, you're going to be the exorcist. Bye. And he jumped in his car and drove off. I'm like, what? And he's big smile on his face. And he waved at me and drove off. So that's how I became the exorcist, yeah.
What do you see as the role of this particular ministry?
Most of the work that's done is gentle ministry to people who are under some kind of spiritual stress. You know, it's not the big scary stuff that you see in the movies, but it's something in their lives that's causing them some stress or grief. And basically, most people, all they need is a reassurance that they're not crazy for wondering if it's a spiritual affliction. You know, what you really don't want is, you know, everybody running around thinking it's always the devil and it's always, you know, evil. And, you know, sometimes someone could be physically ill. I mean, there are reasons why people can be, like, they could be, have a brain tumor or something that creates real problems in their, and they don't understand. So we got to go and see. They could have mental illness. And thank God we're becoming much more aware of mental illness as a real part of human experience so that we're able to deal with that more rationally as well and without the stigma of approaching it.
You mentioned mental illness. How do you figure out if someone needs an exorcism?
Before we can do anything there, we need to have the person's permission for them to go and get medical and mental health checks. Because the worst thing possible is to perform, especially if it is a mental illness that someone's suffering from, the worst thing is to feed into that mental illness by then suggesting to them that there's some demon involved as well.
So you spoke about a couple, you know, really extreme cases. What do those look like when you do end up in that kind of situation?
I mean, my very first exorcism was assisting Father Vince Lampert. He'd given me before that, you know, a whole load of books to read and so on. All the books start the same way, you know. 99.9% of exorcism ministry is gentle and it's prayerful and it's quiet and it's whatever. And then the whole book talks about the 0.1% because I guess that's what people are interested in a lot of the time, you know. So I went along to this expecting it to be, you know, 99.9, but it was actually the 0.1. And Father Vince had told me all this a long time before. He said, if any of these things that happen, the intention is to distract us from prayer because we get fascinated by the strength, the voice change, the visual change, all those things. The sort of the knowledge the person has that's not natural knowledge. It's really exhausting. So Father Vince, knowing I had a sweet tooth, had bought me a big family pack of M&Ms. So after all that work, we sat around a table eating M&Ms and a divided up brownie. And that's all we had for dinner that night. Father Vince says he often... he often goes to Dairy Queen, wherever he is, for some ice cream after. That's his treat.
Can you tell me a little bit about the conference in Rome?
Amazingly, for a conference, you know, that is dealing with evil, the atmosphere was just, it was really happy. You know, people would say, so, you know, where are you from? And I would say, Alaska. And they're like, Alaska? Wow. So, you know, is the devil at work in Alaska? And I said, well, you know the expression, till hell freezes over. I said, there's not a huge amount of demonic going on in Alaska, thank God, but there is some.
That was KCAW's Meredith Reddick speaking to Father Joseph McGilloway for St. Gregory's Catholic Church in Sitka. He spoke about his role as the official exorcist for the Catholic Church in Alaska.